Just this once. Just this once. One time only. It's his bikes. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
The name on the ownership does say Marquez. It says Alex Marquez.
Welcome to episode 579 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And wow. Yeah, we're saying it again. We had 100,000 people in the house at Jerez to watch Marquez bring home a victory in his own backyard, in front of the family, in front of arguably his most dedicated fan base. But it wasn't the Marquez you were probably thinking of. Yeah, because after 93 attempts, 93 Premier Class races, we can finally say after 6 years of trying, Alex Marquez is a MotoGP Grand Prix winner. Yes. It's been a long time coming, but we could finally say that it's happened. And yeah, a genuine real people's champ moment. I know many people have said that they were delighted for Alex to get his first win. He's a real popular guy in the paddock, extremely well-liked. And yeah, delighted for him. And we'll be talking about it over the next 40 minutes or so. And joining me to discuss our bikes, his bikes edition, first up is Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, sir.
Hello, everyone. If you do end up seeing any highlights packages of this episode, you probably won't see my face as I have my camera off in fear of my Comcast overlords. The internet's been a little bit spotty today, so hopefully this all works out just fine, which is more than I can say about Mark Marquez's Sunday.
Yeah, that Sky broadband to you British listeners out there, you know, I don't think anything more needs to be said about the quality of their broadband. If you know, and you're a customer, you certainly know. RJ O'Connell, how was Kona, my friend?
Kona was chill. I was there for GT World Challenge America, and also GT4 America's only three-hour endurance race of the season, won by Toyota youngsters Gresham Wagner and Tyler Gonzalez. Got to see a couple of good GT World Challenge races. Got to explore Austin a little bit, at least as a primer before I'm likely back there for the 6 hours of Kona around Labor Day weekend. So it's all good. I'm keeping my streak of being at Kona for at least 1 year alive, for 5 years running in defiance of God's law, and despite the fact that I haven't been accredited for a Formula One race in almost 2 years.
It's not a bad streak to have. I recommend the two-wheeled world. Kona in April in Marquez land sounds like a fun time.
Call it Marquez land anymore.
Has anybody else made a prominent claim to the property?
Not really.
It just keeps going through owners these days while Mark keeps getting lost in the woods out back.
Yeah, that happens a lot with Mark, unfortunately.
Sometimes I think Mark is just out there checking out like some of the local bars. He's checking out some of like the local taquerias. He's just checking out like God, what else is Austin famous for other than, you know, that electric car company?
Wild Eats. Good barbecue.
The University of Texas.
Denim. Cowboy boots.
A lot of those things.
Daniel Ricciardo's weird handlebar mustaches. Anyway, let's talk about some bikes.
about some bikes. It didn't happen at Kona. They happened at Jerez.
Indeed, they very much happen. We'll be talking about Alex Marquez's win. We'll be talking about his brother pissing another one up the wall. We'll talk about Fabio Quartararo, MotoGP pole sitter in the year of our Lord 2025. That happened. That's a real thing. Pecco Bagnaia's continued struggles. Maverick Viñales back on the wagon for KTM.
Bagnaia. Oh God.
It's just, they've
combined, but the bozos emerging.
Oh no, we're crossbreeding them like crufts. It's terrible. And we'll talk a little bit of takeaways from the test as well. Yeah, there's some more not great news about KTM at the moment as well, which we've glossed over, which we'll talk about in a little bit as well. But in the meantime, here's some places you can find us. We're on YouTube.com. If you want the full episodes of the show on there and like getting your podcasts on YouTube, you can. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. If you want to follow our boss on Blue Sky personally, you can at Dre Harrison, CBuckley917, and RJ O'Connell. .bsky.social, we're all active on there. You can check out highlights of the show and some exclusive extra videos from yours truly on our Instagram page, Motorsport101Pod. Check that out if you haven't already. We're doing quite well over there. I mean, almost 1,000 views per video now, which is wild. So thanks to everyone that's been subscribing over there and following along. I hope you guys have been enjoying it. And of course, our website, motorsport101.com, for full written reviews of everything we cover in F1, MotoGP, and IndyCar. And Ask Dre will be out tomorrow as well. So by the time this goes up, we'll also have this month's Ask Dre piece to wrap up the month of April. That'll be out on there, because tomorrow it's going to be May. Of course, if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content, and you upgrade to the $10 tier, where you can listen to all of these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Sulu244 is doing right now as well. Yeah. New Patreon backer. Thank you, Sulu. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. Thank you for your ongoing support. Thanks to Kira, Ghost Raptor, and Jason in the chat as well. Hope you guys enjoy listening in as well. Much, much appreciated. Thank you for your ongoing support. Let's talk about a little bit of bikes as we talk about the 2025 MotoGP Spanish Grand Prix right after this.
Dre, you mentioned it, for one weekend only, potentially more further on down the road, but at least for this weekend, it was his bikes, not Mark's, Alex's. Ironically, after 93 attempts in the Premier class, Alex Marquez dominated the Spanish Grand Prix. After his brother's freak crash in the early stages, Alex sat behind the pole sitter. Just checking my notes here. Fabio Quartararo?
Yeah.
Until there was 11 laps left, Alex passed him at turn one, took off in the distance. Fabio was able to hold on to second ahead of Pekka Bagnaia in third, Maverick Vinales in fourth. Mark recovered from the crash to at least take 12th on the final lap, but it could have been a lot more. Drake, Alex Marquez finally got his first Grand Prix win at this level. It's been due. It's been overdue.
Yeah, I mean, I tore up my usual script that I normally have for when I do a race review, because I wanted to talk at length about Alex Marquez's career. And look, there are certain things in life I cannot relate to. One of them is being a little brother. I'm the eldest of three in my family. I can't imagine what it's like being a little brother. Even more so when big brother is arguably the greatest MotoGP rider of all time. How do you stand up on your own two feet when your brother, by the time... I mean, look, here's a comparison. 2012 was when Alex Marquez made his Grand Prix debut. By 2012, Marc Marquez had already won two world titles in 125s and Moto2, and the people who knew their racing knew what was about to happen with Marc. So much so, the sport bent the rules so that he could ride a factory Repsol Honda immediately. By the time Alex Marquez got to the top flight in 2019 and going into 2020, Mark had already won six out of the seven Premier Class World Championship years he'd taken part in. He was already one of the greatest ever by the time his brother had even got his foot in the door. And by the time he did, he was already demoted from Repsol Honda before he'd even turned the wheel in anger. Like, Alex Marquez has always had to be in the shadow of either his brother or other ridiculously talented riders that he had to go through in terms of a murderer's row. You look at some of those Moto2 fields, for example, that he had to go through. They are quality names everywhere. Maverick Vinales, Tito Rabat, Pecco Bagnaia, Franco Morbidelli, Brad Binder. These were all, you know, every person I've just named there is a MotoGP race winner at bare minimum. Some of them have won world championships at the highest level. Franco is a world championship runner-up. Brad Binder has been the best non-Ducati rider in the sport for the last 3 years now. Like, these are murderers row when it comes to talent. Alex, yeah. It took Alex half a decade to get to this point. So to see him now as a MotoGP race winner, world championship leader, I wasn't sure he was ever going to get to this point, because just 3 years ago when he was at LCR Honda, his career was hanging by a thread.
Yeah, he got to Repsol Honda, and as soon as he got there, they didn't want him in the factory team anymore.
Yep, he was demoted after a single preseason test. That same preseason test that was a preview to Honda's nightmarish first half of this decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for a long time, it looked like Alex has been treading water. And then last couple of years with Grazini, he's put his career back together. And equipped with a GP24, he has been the most consistent man in this field so far.
He's the fastest man all weekend. So it's been a few races. We've got enough of a sample size. We know he's won a race. We know he's been able to hang with his brother when his brother has been good. Are we now at the point where we can seriously say this guy's a title challenger in 2025?
He's more of challenger than Pecco's been so far.
Why not? Like, he's not making huge mistakes. He's had one bad session, arguably, all year, and that was the Qatar race where he hit the side of Fabio Di Giantonio, and that was only a midday. Not really a terrible day. I think he was sixth that day in Qatar. That's not a terrible result by any stretch. It's slightly below par, but for Alex, he's pretty much been second everywhere else all season except for this win. This was coming. This was not a fluke. The way he was riding, he was always going to steal one of these the moment either Mark or Pecco or anyone else of the front runners we've seen this year would make a mistake. And this was the opportunity. Mark bins it early. Alex is leading the queue. God bless him. Fabio Quartararo put in the good old college try, but he was never winning that in the long run. So when Alex had the opportunity and took it, he was in prime position to win, and he held his nerve and he did it. Like, and again, the way this weekend, look, here's the thing about this weekend that I love, right? If you didn't know any better, you thought it was a Marc Marquez weekend. Two crashes on Friday, threw a bike up the wall. Alex complained the bike was too good. There was so much rear grip and it was so stable, it actually gave him too much confidence. And just went into turn five too fast and wrecked one of his bikes. But the same end of practice session, he broke the all-time lap record to go fastest to make Q2 automatically. Only a 10.5 off pole in Q2 on Saturday, was second in the sprint again, finished second in every sprint so far this season. And when the opportunity came, when Mark made a mistake and crashed, he was in the driver's seat. And what happened? Second half of the race, Alex was untouchable. If he didn't know any better, that's a Marc Marquez race weekend, is it not?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, and the thing is, it's not even that. It's that he had to go and take it. And he had to go take it from Pecco, and he put one on Pecco to get around him. And then, Fabio Quartararo, God's strongest soldier out front, did what he could, but could not hold Alex back. And once he got to about second and a half up the road, he took it down a notch and basically just stroked it home.
Yeah, it was a systemic picking apart of the... I mean, when was the last time Pecco Bagnaia was passed in race trim at Jerez? Probably 4 years ago. Like, we forget Pecco has won the last three here.
Really forget, because it's all we could talk about going into this weekend. And was he the fourth fastest rider here across the weekend?
Probably. If there's one other big headline to take away from this weekend, because again, this was the weekend I was circling even harder than Qatar, because Pecco has made the Spanish Grand Prix his bitch. He's won it 3 years in a row here. to the dismay and to the disgust of every local Spaniard in attendance. He's dominated. I won't say dominant here, but he's gone to the front, and when he's at the front at Jerez, he's invincible. He's not been touched in 3 years. Like, Mark came close last year, but Pecco won that fight. And we had to hand it to him. It was a brilliant fight, but he won those battles. Pecco Bagnaia got beat at Lorenzo Corner by Alex Marquez, clean as a whistle. That's never happened. Like, Bagnaia is not leaving Jerez any more of a title contender than he was when he got here on Thursday.
That should be big alarm bells for garage number 63.
It's the Gary
I don't know how else to put it, really.
It's the Gary Neville meme. This was the banker. This was the guarantee. This was the one that was supposed to never fail. This was meant to be the invincible one. And he came off the back of this weekend being beaten by a Yamaha straight up over a race distance. That should be a cry for help. And with Pecco, I mean, stretch it out a little bit here, Cam. Pecco has not been the number one man at any Grand Prix weekend we've had so far this season out of the five we've had. Is that fair to say?
There's a number of those weekends where he wasn't even the number two Ducati man, dude.
Most of them has been number three. Tyler Landy was number three, right?
Yeah.
Tyler Landy was number three.
It's just been... You know, He's now the one who looks like he's treading water because, I mean, even with Mark throwing the weekend away, he only threw the race away and he was able to recover a couple of points. He still blew him away in the sprint, and every sprint race now is just, well, there's Pecco coming in third. Every single race. Sunday was the rock upon which he built his church. And now on Sunday... He's maybe third best Ducati rider on a given weekend.
It is funny because we've had the exact same podium for all five sprint races this year, which I think is just very funny that it's
been. We had a Ducati 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the sprint.
Yeah. They locked out the top six. And the worst of the fastest laps from any of the Dukes were faster than anybody else in the field.
By a little over a tenth. Which is just a ridiculous statistic. Less crazy dominant in race trim, but still. Pecco isn't even looking like the number two title threat in the field right now. That's gotta be concerning.
Yeah, he's the number three guy. He's the locked in third best man on sprints right now. And I'd argue he's probably the third strongest rider on race trim overall over the course of this season behind the Marquez brothers. Like, Alex Marquez is legitimately beating Bagnaia week in, week out on last year's bike.
Well, it's a good thing that the Ducati guys are on most of last year's bike, too. So are the KTM guys. I wonder if that's how Yamaha got better, just going to last year's bike again.
Yeah, it's a running theme. Quartararo was great this week. I mean, he got his first pole in what? 3 years? First
Grand Prix pole? 560 days since the last podium as well?
Yeah, 1,160 days since Fabio Quartararo's last pole position for Yamaha. That was the Indonesian Grand Prix of 2022.
Yeesh.
The Rain Shaman weekend. Oh, boy.
That man put in the Lord's work this weekend. There was nothing more he could do. I like how when he crashed from the sprint and basically just got a wobble while Mark went by him. He's just like, hey. Still the best weekend I've had in a while.
At least I'm crashing from second. No one cared. Like Yamaha was like, we don't care. Fabio was like, I was just happy to lead a race again. which just says it all about Yamaha, where they've been, how quickly they fell off a cliff off the back of the middle of 2022 when they were last a really strong factory.
It's a world champion who doesn't even turn 26 until sometime this year, if he hasn't already.
He turned 26 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I'm like, this dude has plenty left in the tank. We're just talking about, like, holy shit, this guy is back on top. It's been so long. It feels like the kind of stuff you say about somebody who's like 8 years older and has had way more miles on the tank and is riding for not a factory anymore.
He's the same age as Jorge Martin, the reigning world champion.
Well, that is just how long ago Fabio's title feels, because the entire sport has changed shape since then.
Not massively. Like, when Fabio won his world title in 2021, Ducati were just starting to establish themselves as the best bike in the field. They weren't quite there yet. Another year would go by, and then, okay, this is real now. Ducati are the number one bike in the sport.
Fabio, stop talking front so much.
Yeah.
Some of them did.
Well, depends on who you ask, really. But that's got to be a nice shot in the arm for the Yamaha factory, who are developing their V4 engine as we speak, who have needed a big result. They went from bottom of the Constructors' Championship to second off the back of this one result, and it was the first time anyone other than a Ducati has been on a podium this season in MotoGP, Grand Prix or Sprint. There is a different coloured box in the Manufacturers Championship on Wikipedia other than green or gold in the case of Ducati. If you know, you know.
Yeah, and what makes it all the more frustrating is that really might not have been second, but one Mr. Mir keeps whipping bikes at walls and I'm tired of it.
This guy again,
also a world champion, let's not forget, off the back of a consistency season.
This was the marvel of consistency. If you need a third place, he'll get you a third. If you need a top 10, he'll get you third. If you'll need a win, he might get you a win, but it's more likely a third or a second.
He has one Premier Class win, the same amount as Alex Marquez. But I did the math. This is his 14th DNF in a Grand Prix in his last 24 starts. Since the start of last season, and 13 of them were crashes. There was one mechanical in there.
What's happened?
And the thing is that the Honda is not what it was last year. It is now mid. We are now certified mid, as I said before on this podcast.
I would argue it's a little bit better than mid now, Cam. Johann Zarco is consistently in the top 8 now. Top 6 on a good weekend now.
When it's good, sometimes he then crashes the bike as well, but needs must. Like, it's no one has a good bike except Ducati. Everyone else is varying degrees of trash in this.
And Luca Marini's had 3 straight top 10s. Honda are better than mid now. They are arguably the number 2 bike in this championship.
Even if they're number 4 in the constructors.
But it doesn't matter when Mir crashes from 6th and 7th every fucking week.
You're not wrong.
And it's
he's
like
the thing stopping them from being the second best bike on score right now, because he was the top rider for them. And this weekend was the worst crash of the whole set. As soon as we were watching him from the back of another bike, I'm like, he's going to crash. 2 seconds later, he crashed.
Yep.
He was making the corner.
We called it in real time. It is rough out here. Including the sprints, he's only seen a checkered flag 4 times out of 10 this season.
Why?
Because he does not fundamentally understand the front tire of his bike. That's more than obvious to me. And that's been for the last 2 years now.
God.
You've got a 60% DNF rate since the start of last season. That's catastrophic.
At least last year, the bike was so unbelievably trash that he had an excuse. He doesn't have that excuse anymore.
No. And it's going to hurt that much more when we know Honda's now capable of top 6 finishes. That's one thing. Speaking of crashes, we've got to talk about Mark a little bit here.
Too much sauce.
You know what it is? I think he just panicked. I think he panicked that he got a poor start. Should have, because these things, right? His starts have been brilliant this year. He's held almost every hole shot from almost every pole he's had this season, right? This was the first weekend of the year he didn't qualify on pole. His sprint start was fine. He only got muscled out by a desperate Fabio in the sprint. Like, and but that was a poor start by his standards in the Grand Prix. Immediately tried to get past Pecco and failed. Knew he was third with Fabio a second down the road. And if there's one Mark weakness so far this season, it takes him about five or six laps to get going. We saw it in Qatar. He was slow. He wasn't quite sure of himself. And then when he's comfortable, his back half, he's untouchable. We never got to the back half in F because he was down on lap three. I think he just panicked. I think he panicked. And I think he tried to take too much of a liberty on a part of the track where he knew he was strong, and that was turn eight. Because his, on the left-handers, he was gaining a good tenth of a second on those medium-speed left-handers in sector three. And he just went too hard and he binned it.
I mean, that happens, but, like, you know, it's Marc Marquez. We expect better. Some people, the cynics will say that this sort of crashing is what you expect.
It is to a degree, because, I mean, it's all we've ever really known from Mark is that he is the originator of the Bozo gene. But as the years have gone on from Mark, he generally, as mentioned before, he will crash in practice, find out. I think this is the problem. I don't think he knows what the limit is on that Ducati yet.
And well, that's been a problem for years because, like, Pecco has said the same thing. You don't know where the limit is on it because it gives you so much confidence and grip until you're over it and you're already skidding on the ground.
Yeah, that's a common theme with all of Mark's crashes this season. And he had three of them. The Cota in the rain in practice, where he admitted he went in too hot. Cota in the race, where he admitted he went in too deep on a wet curb and lost concentration when he was flying. And now this, when he would later admit on the Monday after the test, he just went in too hot into turn eight. He was never making the apex in a month for Sundays, and you could see he was going. The only compromise is that Mark is still probably the fastest Ducati out there, and he's super quick in race trim. Because even with a damaged fairing...
half a fairing, he was the fastest rider on track for basically the entire race.
Yeah, the second half of the race, it was within a couple of hundredths. Going to Crash.net on average pace, he was effectively matching Alex at the front. It would have been a very interesting race between him and his brother, because they were virtually dead level on pace.
With half a fairing.
Like, Simon Patterson was arguing on the race that he should have been black and oranged. I wouldn't have blamed race control if they did. Half that fairing was hanging off. It wasn't great. He was able to recover to 12th and score 4 points. Every point counts. That is precious stuff.
Yeah, he's made it a 1 point gap at the front when it was going to be a couple more than that.
But this is why I think Alex Marquez is a genuine contender. You're not rewarded for winning as much in MotoGP if you compare it to Formula One, right? Look at Formula One scoring system. You only get points to 10th, right? And you get given more points over second place if you win. In Formula One, it's 7 points. It's 25, 18, 15, 12, etc. In MotoGP, there's points down to 15th, and it's 25, 20, 16, 13. .. down to 15th and 1 point. MotoGP rewards consistency over winning more than most series do. And that is why Alex Marquez has got every chance of winning this championship the way he's riding right now, because he's not making mistakes, and Marc Marquez is. Yeah. It's as simple as that. He's thrown, like, Marc Marquez on current form should be 40 points up at the moment. Any objections to that?
No, I think there's a good chance that he should be undefeated this year.
He would have won every points-paying session this year, being equal.
On raw speed, he is untouchable right now. He's got 2 temps on the field.
I think that's the much more concerning thing, is that he has thrown one definite win, one probable win away, and he's 1 point off the championship. Because he has won every other points-paying session.
Yeah, he's perfect in sprints right now. He'd be matched something that only Jorge Martin has ever done, and that is win 5 sprints in a row. He's got a shot at the all-time record next time out at Le Mans. If he wins that sprint, he's 6 for 6. No one has ever won 6 sprints in a row.
cats and dogs, mass hysteria. The birds are chirping. I mean, Maverick Vinales. We talk about this dude amidst some recent troubling developments within KTM as a greater entity besides its motorsports program.
Yeah, the news dropped, I think it was Speed Week that was first to report it going into the weekend, that KTM has ceased production of their road bikes at the moment. This is alongside a lot of hinted at news that despite the Austrian courts approving their bailout plan, the plan essentially was you're going to have to pay back €500 million of this debt in the next 6 months. And apparently KTM are now defaulting on that and saying we're not going to be able to pull this off unless we do something more drastic. Uh-oh. So the latest story is they may have to loan the equity of their company in the form of a loan to raise cash to be able to pay off some of this debt.
This is a lot of paying Peter, of borrowing from Peter to pay Paul to... I mean, that it doesn't sound great.
I mean, it's bad, but like, surely they've got plenty of street bikes to sell so they can offset some of that.
Who's buying bikes in this economy?
I was more referencing the fact that they have stopped street bike production indefinitely due to supplier issues.
Yeah, we mentioned this a second ago when you were going to try to close your bedroom door.
Oh, it's closed. It's close. I'm on the other side of the house. Like, supplier issues sounds to me in this situation more like suppliers not being paid issues.
Yeah, because they haven't got cash. They haven't got cash flow right now. Because where's their income coming from?
Oh, that's the neat part. It's not.
Yeah, and like I said, and the thing is, right, they're running out of shit they can sell to raise money. Like, KTM is a racing brand. KTM only actually owns 50.1%. Bajaj owns the other 49.9%. So if, like, that's arguably their biggest asset, is their racing team. They might have to relinquish control of their racing team to float this company in the air going forward. And this is off the back of already, you know, cutting 1,500 jobs, which sucks.
I'm going to be real with you. I think they're screwed.
It doesn't sound great.
Not in a sense of canning the racing team, not in the sense of we might have to lay some people off. I think this company is screwed.
Yeah. From my perspective of covering Japanese car racing, the situation at Nissan sounds much more optimistic than what's going on at KTM. And the situation at Nissan doesn't sound great.
No. And I watched the regular car Roman talk about, you know, essentially the situation in Nissan, and that was a fascinating video, and I highly recommend it. I don't know. I'm not a business expert. I'm not going to pretend like I am. My business knowledge extends as far as my A-grade, A-level I got in business studies. So go me. About time it came in useful for something. But generally speaking, if you're selling off assets to raise money in the short term, as RJ says, you're basically robbing from Peter to pay Paul. That's never a good sign. That is a sign that says to me, you are not generating cash flow.
We're not solvent as a company right now.
Yeah, and that if the wrong bill drops at the wrong time, you're in trouble, essentially. It's like playing Monopoly and you're trying to avoid Bow Street. Because you know there's a hotel on that shit and you're in big trouble if you land on it. We all know that feeling when you've played Monopoly and the other dude's got 90% of the board already, and it's a matter of time before you die.
That doesn't mean
serious, by the way. Again, the concern is, we talked about kind of the creditor situation and being allowed to pay back a certain percentage of that debt.
30.
Well, that's them. If the wrong creditor comes knocking and says, pay up or we're winding your company up, it's a done deal.
Yeah, and this is the problem. There were other outside creditors who were prepared to absorb some of KTM's debt, but they wanted a bigger repayment rate than the 30% they have to pay out their Austrian suppliers by the courts of law over in their home country. And that's a problem. Like, again, where are you generating the cash to pay off half a billion euros in 6 months?
I think they're screwed.
I'm not going to go as far as that point yet. They could still sell a good chunk of this, but it ain't pretty. It might be KTM is dissolved down to just a racing brand and it's owned by someone else. That I think has got a very realistic chance of happening. And it's a shame because we love them as a racing brand. And as mentioned, Maverick Vinales is riding the nuts off that thing right now.
Yeah, he is truly an enigma wrapped inside a puzzle, compressed inside of an enigma in a mystery.
Apparently, they've discovered some weight transfer in the tech-free side of the garage that's helping Maverick out because it suddenly made them a million times quicker. And Maverick's got this figured out, and the rest of the factory KTMs are not picking that up as much, and it didn't help that Pedro Acosta apparently has been riding with arm pumps since day one in MotoGP because he finally had arm pump surgery yesterday to fix it. But yeah, he's been riding with arm pump for over a year.
You figure it would have got that fixed at some point before this, given how much better the arm pump surgeries have been and what? It used to put you out for months. Now we can have you back next race.
I like Pedro Acosta, but he's an idiot for that one. Like, what do you gain from hiding that?
It just compromised. Like, we know he wants out. Everyone and their mother knows he wants out of KTM. That is hurting your leverage over everyone else if you go, yeah, actually, I was riding hurt this whole time, but I thought I would just tough it out.
I think it actually, in his mind, he probably thinks, this actually makes it look better because I was riding hurt and look at my results. They dipped a little bit, but they're still good results.
He had a horrible stretch at the back of last year where he was crashing for fun, including from the lead of the sprint and the Grand Prix in Motegi. Like, you don't get any bonus points for riding hurt, especially when the operation involved doesn't even need anesthetic anymore. It's literally keyhole surgery, and you're sent home the same day. Why?
I don't get it.
Why are you hype? It's, forgive me, I love Pedro Acosta a bit, and he's a, like, the thing is about Pedro, I love him because he's a very intelligent rider. You think he's mature beyond his years. He gets it from a marketing standpoint. He's dumb as hell for that one. Dumb as hell. And I don't know if KTM knew about this or not, but someone has been irresponsible here, and I think it's Pedro himself. Do better. Like, what do you gain by hiding arm pump for a year and change? It's stupid.
Cloud on the internet.
Ridiculous. Silly.
It's the most important. It's the most important currency there is. Dre, we had a test recently. What kind of takeaways do we got? Also, like, swift recovery to Franco Morbidelli, who got another bad knock on the head from a
apparently
crash.
No.
Well, it's not a concussion. It is a mistranslation. He has a severe cervical bone bruise is what he has, which
contusion. They got concussion and contusion mixed up.
Yeah, so he has a significant bone bruise. He's hurt. He's hurting. It's going to hurt like a mother, but he's going to be all right.
Yeah, okay.
I was getting worried again.
Yeah, because he crashed in the Grand Prix, but we never got a replay of it. It wasn't shown on the hard camera. So, and the initial reports coming out of the race weekend was that it was a concussion. So, of course, we were concerned given he had a severe head injury last year, Frankie. Thankfully, it was not that. But, you know, I'm sure you could dig it up on the internet if you want to feel like you're a journalist for a minute. You know, Twitter search it or something. I'm sure it's out there because people are sickos and think, hey, I'm going to upload an accident where someone hurt himself. Yeah. Big takeaways, that not a huge amount of takeaways to come out of the test. Apparently, Pecco found something in regards to setup that he was quite happy about, even though the times were down the bottom, which was a bit weird. Aprilia was testing out a lot of their new aero parts. They're thinking about maybe activating their one aero joker from the concessions where they're allowed to change aero parts. Maybe if they drop to tier D, because there's a chance that might happen with the concessions. So they were testing a bunch of stuff out there. We also had a new Michelin tire test as well with Johann Zarco's Honda. Apparently he seemed to quite like it.
Holy shit.
Whether they actually run it, we'll have to wait and see. I don't know why Michelin are throwing all this money at a tire that's only going to run for a year and change at best, especially given they've been yeeted out of the goddamn sport. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Not my money.
It took them long enough to actually get it out on. What is the point, man? These tires have been terrible for years under the load of these bikes. Oh, yeah, 1 year to go. Well, hey, we're finally going to put that new slick in place. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yes, I see Raptor in the chat is saying they want to go out on good publicity. Where? What other major series that a tire supply is for right now that's on the level of MotoGP?
I can think of two. One of them we're going to next week.
What, WEC?
IMSA.
That's just about it.
I'm not going to Belgium. Come on, dog.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and as also mentioned, KTM also, if you want to buy a MotoGP bike, they're selling one of theirs right now.
Yeah.
Down
the bad. They're selling the 2023 bike right now.
That is the top speed record holder.
Yeah.
That is the one that Brad Binder broke the record on. Shame that's all that bike did competitively.
62 kilometers an hour, something
366.1.
Crazy.
Or in old money, that's 227 and a half.
Oof, Lord, that's potent, to say the least.
I can tell we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here for the end of this show because not a whole lot else really came out of this.
Well, I'm stumped. You got 40 minutes out of this.
The air was strong here.
Should we talk about what's coming up on another very busy bumper-to-bumper weekend of professional motorsport, including two in our primary series? We're going back to Miami, and we're going back to Barber Motorsports Park.
Sprint weekend in Miami. Whoa. If I hear one more influencer pick Miami song by Will Smith as their background music in a video, I'm going to jump off a bridge.
Or you might slip from underneath the bridge like Georgina did at last year's Children's of Alabama Indy Grand Prix, which is also this weekend. Can Scott McLaughlin do it again, or will Alex Palou win in the HRC official livery?
He better. It'd be a waste of a good livery otherwise. That thing's a beauty.
Would be. I mean, you keep it bike related. It could always be worse. He could have crashed out with an hour to go with a 3-lap lead at Le Mans.
You're not letting this go, are you?
I will not. That might be my Golden Cock nomination for the year.
You are a very petty man, Buckley. You know that, right?
I mean, that's why they keep me around here.
Yeah.
What else we got? We've got Formula E at Monaco, the actual Monaco Grand Prix, Emmett's 5 Cup at Barber Motorsport Park, the main event of the IndyCar undercard, Super GTs at Fuji, NASCAR's at Texas Motor Speedway, World Superbike is at a service in Italy.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun weekend.
Yeah, Cremona for World Superbikes. BSB kicks off at Alton Park this year as well. Arguably the best superbike series in the world. And unfortunately, it's on Discovery Plus now. Yay for paywalls. Worth pointing out as well for you Brits out there. Formula E is free to air this weekend on ITV4. Look, we don't cover Formula E anymore, but I'm always going to promote chances to watch motorsport for free. So,
absolutely.
And it's Monaco. It's probably going to be good. Yeah. So
the Monaco E-Prix dipped off a few years lately, but then again, so is the entire series. But like,
it's free motorsport. Like, just go watch
motorsport.
It.
It's free, and I feel like I'm losing money.
It's exactly. Free. We're giving you land. We're giving you a house. It's free motorsport, Jim.
Yeah, so it's going to be wild, to say the least. Yeah, a lot of motorsport to cover. We'll be back for a review of Formula One at Miami next week, as well as IndyCar's Grand Prix of Barber. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connor. Thank you very much for listening. See you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Demand the restoration of our bikes. Damn it, Mark.